welcome to Argue the Toss from GameIndustry.com. I'm Shella.
And I'm Drew. And together we're arguing about the things that really matter in games and films and stuff.
Indeed we are.
And yep.
Today it is... I almost said films, because that's what we always talk about.
Just default to films.
Yeah. But it's not, it's games.
It's games and some short films about games.
Yeah.
Or trailers, as they are called in the industry. Yeah, we're covering a few things today. I'm going to be talking about the new Super Mario game, Super Mario Odyssey, which released last Thursday, Friday, to massive sales, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
And you are going to be talking about...
Assassin's Creed Origins, which launched the same day, I think.
Yes, yeah, they did come
and
out.
Yeah, so they're sort of like rivaling for number one spot, I think.
Yes.
I think Assassin's pipped it, did it?
I imagine it probably did.
But that's still pretty impressive,
yeah.
Considering, you know, the Switch ownership must be much lower than...
Yeah, like I think apparently there's a sort of 33% conversion rate on Mario Origins as well, in that like a third of Switch owners just immediately bought Mario.
Oh yeah, I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
I'm surprised it's so low.
Yeah, fair enough. Like maybe everyone's waiting until next payday.
Yeah.
Then we're going to talk about the recent trailers for The Last of Us 2 and our favourite upcoming game, Detroit Become Human. our favourite to talk about, anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's get into it. I think you're going to start off with Mario.
Yeah, I have been playing a lot of Mario Odyssey over the past, it's been out a week now, so I guess the past week. Yeah, it's kind of the game I bought a Switch for. Like, I bought the Switch last month because I had a bit of extra money floating around. I thought, well, Mario's coming out next month. I really want to play that, because the trailers for it have been fantastic and really, really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
And I got it day one, and I'm happy to say it's lived up to most of my expectations on that. It's maybe the best 3D Mario game ever, it's particularly nice coming off the sort of 3D Land and 3D World series, which were the ones released for the Wii U and the 3DS. Which I kind of never got along with,
mm-hmm.
Just because I didn't really like the art style. I thought it was all a bit sterile and boring.
Mm.
But yeah, the new one is really good. So the gimmick of it is it's... not that it's even a gimmick. It's sort of a follow-up to Mario 64 and, to a lesser extent, Mario Sunshine, in the way the worlds are structured, in that it's... individual, quite big 3D levels, which you can, you know, explore as Mario, obviously. And it feels like sort of an evolution of Mario 64, in which in that game you have quite big worlds and they've all got six different objectives to complete, which get you stars, and there's also a seventh star for getting 100 coins in each level. Mario Odyssey expands those worlds quite a lot, and rather than collecting stars, you are now collecting moons, which are different because they're moons. they've really upped the amount of stuff there is to collect. So whether a six or seven in each Mario 64 world, in each Odyssey world, there are between, I think it's, on an average world will have between 40 and 80. And there are 600 in the whole game to collect, and I think I've got about 400 now because I've just been playing it almost non-stop. Yeah.
Wow. From the trailers, I thought it had a sort of Who Framed Roger Rabbit kind of feel, because
that's New Donk City,
okay.
Which is one of the levels in the game.
Okay.
It's based on New York, and it's one of the best levels in the game as well. I should say, especially after you've sort of mastered the controls and can navigate it a bit better, because New Donk City is. It's about Donkey Kong, the original Donkey Kong. Pauline, the female character who you rescue in the original Donkey Kong, is the mayor of New Donk City, and there is a set piece which sort of ties Mario Odyssey to the original Donkey Kong in a really interesting sort of a really interesting way in a long 2D section, which is just tons of fun to play. But yeah, it's not. That particular level is does have a sort of Who Framed Roger Rabbit thing going to it, but it's the rest of the game is sort of standard Mario levels and,
okay.
and worlds.
Yeah. I did think that looked kind of fun though, having Mario.
Yeah, it is. It's a really interestingly designed level.
Yeah, and there's some cool memes happening on Twitter as a result. One of which was, I think, Mario sitting in his pants or something, like in these like spotty boxer shorts, and there's some guy in a suit and a hat, and it says that feeling when you're a games journalist and you meet a political journalist.
I saw that. That was really good.
Yeah, it was really good because I was like, just the evening before, I'd watched this documentary about, oh god, I've forgotten her name. What's her name? Didion, the sort of great American essayist. And I was like, oh crap, like holy shit, that's like some real journalism going on there. And I was feeling like inadequate, and then that popped up in my Twitter, and I was like, yep, exactly that.
And so the main thing of the game that makes it different from previous Mario games is that you now have this sidekick character in your hat called Cappy, who allows you can throw the hat, or, like we've discussed it before, you throw the hat on a dinosaur, you become the dinosaur. There any enemy that you see that's not wearing a hat, you can throw your hat on it and you can take it over. Brilliant. And kind of what that means is you have a bunch of smaller characters with just like one or two mechanics that they can use. So for example, you can take over a bullet bill and you can fly around and you can boost, and that's the two or three things you can do. Cool. And then over the course of the game, you get put into situations which take all of those mechanics to the extreme. For example, in the first level or so, there's a Maui head, which has a pair of sunglasses on it. And when you take it over, you can put the sunglasses on or take the sunglasses off. And when you have them on, you can see invisible platforms, but you can only move very slowly when you're wearing them. And if you take them off, you can. So you have to kind of trade off between the two of those. And then as you progress through the game, you come to the post-game content, the end-game content, you will have one of those, and the game will just put you through a set of conveyor belts where you have to just balance between being able to see where you're going and being able to move fast enough so that you don't get sort of kicked off the edge. So it's really interesting in structure because it gives you like small little things you can do, and then just iterates on them and iterates on them until you've sort of mastered each one.
That sounds great.
Yeah, it is. It's really well designed, and you've got the main campaign, which is I think 9 or 10 levels, and then after you finish the main campaign, another half of the game unlocks. It's explicit about it as well. It shows you what's happening. It says, okay, there's all this stuff to do now, and that's when the real challenge of the game comes in, because you get more challenges to do. You get harder, pure platforming sort of challenges and experiments. And as soon as I finished the game, I thought, oh, that's nice to put that away. And then, no, there was just much more to do.
Wow.
And it just got better and better.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. Which is something that the Mario games have done a lot recently. It's just they kind of hide the meat of the game beyond the credits.
Wow.
So the main game itself is not particularly challenging. It's a silly plot for... To be fair, I really like the sort of silly plot that is in it. Mm-hmm. The premise of it is that Bowser has kidnapped Princess Peach again, and is using is going to marry her, and it never sort of discusses whether or not she's into this, but and he steals all sorts of things from all over the kingdoms, not of the Mario world, and to a big sort of wedding showdown at the end. And the mini bosses in between are his wedding planners, which is just a really strange way to go with the with a Mario game, but it works really well. It does. The Peach thing, I think, is kind of a bit dated. That like they're literally fighting over possession of her for the entire game, which is... and after she was like a playable character in the previous Mario game, it feels a bit of a step down. Like, Bowser is literally carrying her under one arm as an object for the for the entire game. It's not a huge game-ruining deal or anything. It doesn't feel, like, mean or particularly misogynist, but it does feel... And it's meant to be silly, and the game kind of does lean into that.
Yeah.
It just feels a little bit out of step with, you know, current trends
it's kind of
trends,
part and parcel of that world, isn't it? You know, it's kind of...
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, but it's kind of part of the Mario package, really, is that.
I mean, it is, but like I say, in the previous couple of games, they've taken Peach out of that role and made her
She has been liberated somewhat, hasn't she?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, going back to the old way, it just feels a little, okay, well, we need to move away from this particular thing now. But it's still fine, and I still really love the plot and how just silly it is, and the ending of it is just... And, you know, without spoiling anything, she does get a little bit more agency near the end of it. The ending sequences, it left a huge smile on my face. It's so much fun. That's basically all I have to say about it, really. It's just really charming and gorgeous, and it's full of set pieces and satisfying boss fights and the occasional musical number, so it's kind of my perfect game.
Oh, that's so nice. Yeah, it's nice when you get a game that just, like, makes you happy and it's fun, and
so, like, I highly recommend it. It was worth buying a Switch for me, and if you're into the Mario series, which I always have been, this is probably it's probably the best 3D Mario that there's ever been.
And Luke wants to know, did you put your hat on a dinosaur?
I did. We've discussed this on Twitter. The game doesn't make you wait for that. It's like the second level. It shows you a big sleeping dinosaur and tells you to put your hat on it. It's a ton of fun.
I think that's, like, got to be a new turn of phrase. I loved that so much, I chucked my hat on a dinosaur.
I'll certainly do my part to try and get that into the lecture.
Right, so to flip the coin onto Assassin's Creed Origins, which has also been making me smile a whole heap. I kind of have a love-hate relationship with the Assassin's Creed series. I loved the early games, and I have to admit I haven't played the last two, so some of the changes may have been implemented in those two. So if there are things I'm saying that this is really great, they've done this and this, and people are thinking, well, they did that, you know, two games ago, that's why. But, you know, this feels to me where Assassin's Creed is best is when it's in ancient history and we're walking through cities that we can't walk through. It was just glorious from the first moments I was in there. You sort of, there's this small scene where you fight some guard or something, and then you find a crack through the rocks or whatever, and you're in this ancient Egyptian tomb, and you have a torch, it's all by torchlight, it's sort of flaming torch, and it is breathtaking, just the attention to detail, which you know we all know the Assassin's Creed games are great for, but you know, you're just standing at the foot of this huge onyx statue, and the torchlight catches some gold hieroglyphs, and then you look around and you see ancient Egypt as it was, in terms of the pillars are painted white and they're colourful, they're not that sandy colour, and it just feels amazing, you know, because, you know, me and my friend used to write notes to each other at school in hieroglyphs. You know, I was kind of, you know, every kid has that kind of, like, Egyptian period. maybe you didn't, but, you know, I had the dinosaur era, and then I had my Egyptian period where I was obsessed with Egypt and stuff, and so for me it was just like, oh my god, this is amazing to just walk around. I was just around, like, walked around there, but there was nothing in there particularly, but I just walked around just, like, drinking in all the detail they'd put into this world. yeah, in terms of that. And then when you get out into the sort of Egyptian cities and they're so alive and all the NPCs are speaking in, I'm not sure if it's modern Arabic or sort of, I don't know what they're mm-hmm. speaking, but they're speaking a different language, and it's just like you feel like you're in this completely foreign world. And yeah, and it's just, yeah, the sort of the way they've brought the culture to life. You'll go into a temple and, you know, there'll be people setting bowls of flowers on into these pools, and you know, people playing ancient instruments and singing certain things. And it's not all just stone either, because there are curtains and drapes and things, which of course we don't see, you know, with what's left of the Egypt we know. It's all just sort of stone. And then you'll like wander through the town, and you'll wander through the embalming room where they're actually mummifying things. And, you know, it's like really brought to life. It's yeah, it's really incredible.
That does sound great. Like, you are selling me on this pretty well.
Okay. Yeah, and so, and you know, our hero is Bayek, who is unapologetically Egyptian. He's dark skinned, which is something that in an Egyptian setting you can never be sure will happen. You know, we've had Elizabeth Taylor, the sort of blue-eyed Cleopatra, so you know, as soon as you see him, you're like, great, he is just like, he is dark brown, and you know, we're in Africa, this is great. And he's he's an interesting character. I am kind of bothered that he has this kind of revenge sort of motivation. That's what's motivating him, is I think it comes up pretty very early in the game that his son was murdered, and this is his motivation for hunting some people down. It's not a huge revelation. That's probably the only thing about him that I think maybe could have been a little bit more interesting than, you know, a dead child. But there we go. It is what it is. But other than that, he is like an interesting character. And one of the things I like about him, you know, he has great friendships with people. You know, he'll sort of bump into someone and then they'll be hugging and talking about old times and stuff. So he's, you know, really kind of charismatic in that way, and I think you warm to him as it goes on as well. But the key thing about him is he has this relationship with a woman called Aya, and she's a great character. She's dressed as an assassin as well, or you know, the assassin garb as we know it from these games. But the thing is, they have this really kind of loving, sexy, kind of supportive relationship. You know, you really feel that they really love each other, and there are scenes where they sort of, I don't know, tumble off screen, you know. And and I'm only early on in their story together, but yeah, that's a real strength of the game so far. I love her, and I'm really hoping that we get to play as her at some point, which would be really cool.
So how in the context of the rest of the Assassin's Creed series, how standalone is it? Because it's still, you know, leaping back and forth from ancient Egypt to whatever present Assassin's Creed is going for. Is it something that's carried on from the previous games, or is it a standalone thing set in the Assassin's Creed universe?
No, it is carried on, and you basically can see Desmond's file and things. Right. So I can't remember the name of the Layla. We're playing as, so when you're in the present day, you're playing as Layla, and she's the one going into the Animus. It's, you know, like a new stage of the corporation. When you go onto her computer, which I have done very briefly, because as much as I can, I avoid going into that world unless it like hauls me out, and then I'm like, okay. And then as soon as I can, I go back in again. And so when you go onto her computer, there are loads of emails. There's loads of text that you can read through if you're really interested in that, which I'm not. I did have a scan through some of them. There's a lot to read about, you know, her background and how she got in there. And she's basically invented a new kind of animus and stuff like this. And she's an engineer. So who's kind of innovating the whole process type of thing. So it is carrying on.
Fair enough. But I'd imagine that stuff then is probably pretty limited to the future sections, which you're not interested in anyway.
No, it does seem fairly peripheral. In terms of sort of gameplay and stuff, they've, you know, because Egypt is obviously has the Nile, you have a chance to get in boats, so you can hop in boats, these quite small boats, and they're used as mounts basically, so you sort of hit the same button as you do to jump on a horse, and then you can traverse and around islands and things like that, and you know, find treasure and things like that on there, and hunt crocodiles and whatnot to upgrade all your gear. So it feels a lot more kind of RPG kind of focused. There's a lot of upgrading you can do of your gear, which I guess was in the Connors game. I can't remember what the name of that one was.
That was Assassin's Creed 3, wasn't it?
Just 3? The
Native American one.
Because you can hunt in this one again, and they're depending on what gear you want to upgrade, you have to hunt different. So there are crocodiles and sort of deer, and there are sort of panther, leopard type things, and so you have to hunt different things to upgrade different kind of gear. And you can, the other cool thing is you can break down weapons to mine them for resources. Which is kind of cool. So money is kind of, I find it kind of irrelevant this game, because you can just kind of hunt, and you pick up quite a lot of weapons, so you don't really need to buy weapons. You can upgrade them at the stores and things. So I haven't really spent much money. I've got like $2,000 or something in my in my pouch.
Egyptian grand.
Yeah, exactly. what else? The other great thing is the eagle. The eagle is amazing, because I can just spend 5 minutes soaring over, you know, whatever landscape I'm in, and it is just gorgeous. And sometimes when the eagle sort of soars over, like a flock of flamingos will sort of take to the air because they'll have been startled or something.
Yeah.
And so you're just flying, and then it just feels like it's so alive. It feels like the wildlife is really acting really naturally. And it's just beautiful. I've taken so many photos.
So does it have a full-on photo mode then? Is there a stop and pan around and pose your shot sort of thing?
Fair enough.
That concept has really taken off in recent games, hasn't it?
Mario
has one as well. It's just,
But the thing is, it's so easy to access, because with like Horizon Zero Dawn, I found it was a bit of a faff. And also with Uncharted, you have to kind of hit options and then go into it and then click out of it. Whereas with this, when you're in the middle of a fight, you just like click down on the thumbsticks and you're in, and then you hit circle and you're out again. And it's just so easy to do that I'm just taking pictures all the time.
It's such a good idea from like an advertising perspective as well, because you do just get lots more people posting screenshots of stuff on social media and advertising the game for you for free.
This is the UI is quite interesting as well. The way the menus, so you can like use the thumbstick, so you can click through using the controller buttons, but you can use the thumbstick to hover over stuff as well.
A mouse pointer.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, which is quite, yeah, it's quite interesting. And I don't know if that's because of the photo mode that they had to implement that then everywhere or not, but it's definitely the best, most accessible photo mode I've ever encountered.
Cool.
And yeah, it's pretty big as well. So I think I'm like level 13, and I spoke to someone who said they're level 20 something, and they said they've unlocked like half the map
Oh, right.
so
Oh,
far.
plenty of it then.
And and there's a mode where you can just go around and walk through it kind of thing.
Oh, cool. A tourist mode.
So I'm really enjoying it, and yeah, I haven't enjoyed an Assassin's Creed this much since two, since Assassin's
Excellent.
Creed
Oh, fair
two.
enough. It sounds pretty good. I'm kind of interested in getting that now. Just to like walk around and see it, because that sounds like such a cool setting.
Yeah, it is. It's the perfect setting. It's, yeah, it's a
I'm
fun.
kind of put off by, like you mentioned, the crafting system and scrapping weapons to make new stuff and upgrading and stuff. It sounds like the game has now taken a lot from like the Far Cry series as well, because that was basically what Far Cry 3 was about. And the thing that's always bothered me about Assassin's Creed is it being a huge collectathon where you've got to kind of just tear yourself away from the main interesting stuff to do the hunting and side quest stuff. And it seems like there's a lot of that in this.
Yeah, I know what you mean, because I mean we're on the same page in terms of, sort of map clutter. And I feel they've got the balance kind of right, and because the world's so beautiful, I kind of don't mind taking time out to do it. And the eagle makes things really easy, because you just like send the eagle up, and you can like if you want to upgrade your breastplate, you can pin that upgrade, and then the eagle can locate the
Oh, fair
places
enough.
where that stuff is, so you can go and do it fairly efficiently. And the other thing I'll say is, although there are lots of missions and things, I think they've trimmed down the l map clutter. I think,
That's cool.
and also the way that those missions are played out, you kind of happen upon them naturally. So you don't kind of miss things, because if you're following the main plot or the ones that you can do for your level, they kind of level out quests as well. So
Ah, I
you
see.
might pick up a quest, but it's level 20 and you're like level 12. So you'll be like, oh, okay, I'll do this level 12 one then. And so then whilst you're doing that, you level up, and then your paths cross with one of the other missions.
I see.
Yeah, and it kind
Yeah,
of,
that sounds better.
yeah. It is. I think, yeah, I think it could be my favorite Assassin's Creed game ever.
Cool. So yeah, so the recommendation then.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I highly recommend. If you enjoyed old Assassin's Creed and fell out of love with it, I'd recommend it. And I have a feeling they're going to bring in more of the ship stuff. I think it's going to be like the perfect amalgam of all the things we liked from previous
The
ones.
best of,
So that's me just having felt like I've merely scratched the surface of the current one. Loving it. So that's nice that we've had two great games that are making us really happy.
And now,
Now.
there's been a lot of social media buzz about two trailers in specific that were released at the what was it? It was
Paris
something,
Games Week.
yes. So we got a new trailer for The Last of Us 2 and a new trailer for Detroit Become Human. And they were linked in theme, in that they were both about horrible, horrible things happening to female characters. So shall we start with The Last of Us 2?
Okay. Yep.
So, I hadn't watched this until about, 5 minutes before we did the podcast. And I had heard on the internet and on Twitter in particular that it was quite a harrowing trailer with a lot of bad stuff happening to the female characters in it. And I kind of, my instant sort of reaction was like, okay, well, it's The Last of Us. That's kind of within theme and, you know, it's part of the setting. I was not prepared for what is actually in that trailer. It's it's harrowing.
Yeah, it is. It's really harrowing. I mean, it's like the sort of, I don't know, it's like a sort of top three worst things you'd want to happen to some characters, let's put it in one scene. You know, it starts with kind of a lynching, essentially.
Yeah, she's just, oh God, that was particularly uncomfortable to watch, I thought. Like, I kind of had to look away.
It was kind of straight out of 12 Years a Slave.
Yeah.
You know, when they leave him on his tiptoes for like the whole day, kind of. I found that really disturbing. And then at some and then the person who's strung them up pulls a knife to her belly. And I think she's pregnant or in the early stages of pregnancy. And then somebody comes sort of to the rescue, but not really, or sort of like bursts into the scene, and their arm is hammered.
Like the misery sort of hobbling thing.
And it doesn't cut away.
No, it doesn't. It shows it like very specifically, very in focus. It felt like the thing I felt coming out of that was like that trailer seemed intrinsically designed just to immediately kind of gross you out and shock you and say, "Oh, this is a terrible, horrible things are going to happen in this."
For headlines. But,
for headlines, because it's kind of a cheap shortcut to just. Yeah. Show these things happening to female characters. Like it's immediately like horrible. And
the way they've got around it obviously is by having women inflict violence upon women.
Yes, but it's still
you
know, when you're watching it happen, you're not worrying about who's perpetrating it.
It's
the same sort of emotional reaction that you have. Again, this trailer still doesn't convince me that I want The Last of Us 2.
No. I mean, that is my main problem, is that I don't really want a Last of Us 2. And then a trailer like this is just further, you know, reinforcing the fact that I don't really want to play The Last of Us 2.
I mean, I still want to play it.
I will play it.
Yeah, cause... I don't think that game's going to be bad.
No. But I just don't want...
It's unnecessary.
Yeah, I just feel like the story has been told. You know, I was happy with where it ended.
And the stuff I've seen in this trailer so far is not somewhere I feel particularly interested in following the characters now.
No. I think the thing is, you know, like there's no context for this violence. So it is just violence. That's all we have to judge it on.
Yeah.
You know, there is no characterization in there. You know, the one positive thing is the sort of representation of Asian characters. So, you know, there were some Asian characters who seemed to have substantial speaking parts in the game, and that's cool. And I saw, you know, lots of Asian fans going, "Wow, this is amazing. Thank you." So there's that. But because that's the first response I saw to it was that. And then... and I was like, I'm not that interested, so I'll just see it when I see it. And then there was the furore about the violence and, you know, that on top of the David Cage one.
Yeah.
You know, it kind of was like, okay, I'm going to look. And then I was like, wow, I can't believe that that was the first thing they took away from that incredibly violent trailer.
No, you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
And speaking of the David Cage one, we are running on for time, so we should talk about that one. In this case, it's David Cage not satisfied with tackling slavery and civil rights, has decided that also domestic abuse,
violence,
domestic violence and child abuse, is something that he is he's the man to.
I mean, frankly, I had to choose someone,
that trailer is kind of gross.
It is. It's really gross, and it's just so badly written.
No, it really is, isn't it? It's like the dialogue in it is just
dialogue of the guy. It's like a robot has been. It's like a robot is writing, trying to write humans. It's just so bizarre.
That would explain the themes of the rest of the game. David Cage is
actually a robot.
Yeah. That's why he wants to write a game where robots are the good guys.
He is actually a robot.
Yeah.
It is just bizarre. It just feels like there is no research done at all for any of his writing.
Absolutely. Yeah, and that's something that we've talked about in the context of all the previous games. Mm-hmm. There's that god awful scene in Beyond Two Souls where you spend about half an hour, with Ellen Page's character joining a group of homeless people, and it just feels like you've never met a homeless person in your life. It's just it doesn't seem like he's going to be treating this with any further respect. So someone on Twitter was pointing out, well, the implication of this scene is that there's a choose your own adventure solution to, you know, escaping domestic violence, which I don't 100% agree with, because, you know, it's in the context of a choose your own adventure game. Mm-hmm. So obviously that is going to happen. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it happens with other horrible things that happen in life in games. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it just does leave a bit of a bad taste in the mouth.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah, there is that inference that you can get it wrong as a victim of domestic
abuse.
So yeah, I mean, it's just, really awful trailer for a game that looks like it's going to be pretty bad.
Mm-hmm. And like, I can't wait to play it. I really can't. I'm gonna buy it. I don't know if I'm gonna buy that game day one, but I'm gonna buy it, and I'm gonna play it, and I'm gonna post about it on Twitter a lot. And there is a position in the market for truly badly written, god awful David Cage games. Like, I think it's like Uwe Boll movies. So they're no good, but it's great that they exist.
I think that a lot of the reaction to these trailers is the fact that the games are using the developers or the publishers are using violence to sell their games, because the thing that really sort of tapped in to people, you know, why they loved The Last of Us isn't because it was violent.
No.
It's because of the core relationship at the heart of the story in that game. Yeah. And they're not selling us on that at all.
No. I'm pretty sure we're going to see another trailer for The Last of Us, which will focus entirely on that stuff.
It's just the fact that those two came out together.
Bit of a uncomfortable pattern.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That was the week that was that in was. Gaming, really.
Yeah.
Some soaring highs.
Yeah.
And crashing and lows with hammers. Lows. So that's it.
Yeah. We're all finished.
And we are.
I'm going to go back to playing Odyssey.
I've got to go out and do things this weekend, and it's a bit annoying because I was like, I do have a game to play, but I can't say to friends I haven't seen for ages.
No.
Can we just not?
Yeah. Sorry, the new Mario is out, so I'm really busy.
So do let us know. What you think of either of those games, either of those trailers? What was your reaction? Where can they do that, Drew?
in the comments, about three of the different places you can find us have comments underneath. So yeah, get in there, put some comments on there. You can also find us on Twitter at ArgueTheCast.
And is there anywhere else? At Gin Lounge or GameIndustry.com, and we're on iTunes and podcast places.
Yes, you found us somewhere, so just go back there and find a place to shout at us.
Yeah, say hello. Yeah, or shout at us. Okay, that's Argue That Toss for this week. Until next time, Drew.
Cheerio.